Okay, this is Gary Parrish again from CBSSports.com again, and let me welcome you to the Iowa College Basketball Podcast again, which is now, of course, brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports and use the offer code FUN. That's FUN at squarespace.com/CBSSports. All right, let's get into it. Jeff Borzello and Matt Norlander are both with me, as they are every single Monday. They are at home. I am in St. Louis. We got a lot of stuff to address from the weekend. I was in Omaha for Doug McDermott's senior night on Saturday night. Then I was in St. Louis, still am, for yesterday's Wichita State win, which is their historic 34th of this season. They'll be 34-0 on Selection Sunday. Meantime, Nebraska put itself in a great position to make the NCAA tournament. Kentucky got pounded at Florida. Andrew Wiggins went for a career high in a loss at West Virginia. Meanwhile, his teammate Joel Embiid is in California seeing a back specialist. Like I said, we got a lot of stuff to get to. Let me start with you, Borzello, because God knows at some point we're going to forget that you're even on this podcast.
Hey, come on.
Here's a very simple question. In your mind, what is the headline from the weekend?
I think it's Wichita State going undefeated. I just think that, you know, we haven't seen it since UNLV. It's been the topic of conversation in college basketball for the past, you know, couple of months. Every time you mention Wichita State, you get a response, whether it's positive or negative. To me, they're the biggest story in college basketball right now, and them finishing 34-0 and going into the NCAA tournament with, you know, I'm guessing a number one seed, I think that's the biggest story right now.
I'm with you. I think Wichita State is the biggest story. I think they're the biggest story going into the NCAA tournament. We've joked about this before when John Calipari said that he had the most overanalyzed team in the history of sports. I would argue that Wichita State is the most overanalyzed and often ignorantly disrespected team in college basketball. They have somehow surpassed Kentucky as a topic of conversation, even though Kentucky's preseason number one ranked team that is, I don't want to say turned into a mess, but certainly hasn't been what it was supposed to be. I love this team. I think I'm all in with them. I think, I swear to God, when the brackets come out, I think I'm going to pick them to win the national championship. I'm just going to ride it all the way to the end. You know, I figure at this point, I'm so deep in there with Wichita State that if they lose early, I'm going to take a hit anyway. So I might as well just push all in on them. Norlander, it wouldn't be the craziest thing to pick Wichita State to win the whole thing. I mean, their numbers, KenPom numbers, Sagarin numbers, all the stuff that tends to matter, they look the right way, don't they?
Hey, guys. Yes, they do. And damn, do I love this time of year. They look really good. I'm ready for the can-they-win-it-all discussion. We've taken too long to get there. But you go 34-0 to Selection Sunday, and let's, you know, we've kind of dodged the one seed discussion for the most part because we know that's inevitable. But let's move on from that. Let's move on from can they make the Final Four, which obviously is no guarantee. But let's discuss whether this team actually can win the national title. I think it is possible. If I was lining up teams I thought were most likely to do it, I don't think I could get beyond five before I had to put Wichita State down. I still wouldn't pick them as the favorite, but I still think they're unbelievable in how they don't get rattled. I mean, the game got to within four. You were there on hand, GP. Van Vliet buries two trays. It goes back up to 10. Indiana State never gets closer again. And that was basically the most drama on the court Wichita State has seen in like 5 weeks. So it's absolutely nuts. And just a real quick one, like I wanted to ask you guys, like if they did do it, if they went 40-0 and undefeated won the title, it would probably be the best sports story of the year and all sports in the calendar year. But where do you think we would put the team, like all time? Would we even considered a top 10 all time basketball, college basketball team? I feel like it wouldn't, even though obviously no one would have ever done 40-0.
I don't think we would put it ahead of the Anthony Davis, Kid Gilchrist team from two years ago. You can make a case. I just don't think we would think of it that way.
They're always going to be like, listen, they could go 40-0, and let's be clear, they're probably not going 40-0, right? Like Greg Marshall said yesterday, we think we can win the whole thing. We want to win the whole thing, but like 68 of us are going to be in the tournament, and 67 of us aren't going to win the whole thing. You know, like the odds are overwhelmingly against anybody to win the whole thing. Like I'll let you guys for however much money you want, take whatever team you want, and I'll just take the field. You know, right. So if you're lining up to make it a, if Wichita State doesn't do this, then they weren't for real. Then you're just sort, you're rigging the game against them. But like, there's only two teams in the country right now that are ranked, you know, number one offense, number one or top 10 offense, top 10 defense in terms of efficiency at KenPom. It's Florida and Wichita State. And so this is a great basketball team. Now, will it ever be remembered even at 40-0 as one of the all-time greats? I doubt it, because they don't look the right way. You know, you kind of need, you know, they don't, they, where's your top five pick? Where's your future NBA all-star? They don't pass that test. You know, I guess Frank could play in the NBA someday. I guess Ron Baker could play in the NBA someday, theoretically. I guess Clay Anthony could maybe end up on a roster someday. But even your biggest Wichita State defenders would acknowledge they're not sitting here with the typical kind of pros that you need to go win the whole thing. That said, I genuinely believe they're good enough. And so does, you know, these advanced algorithms that are historically great at grouping people who are good enough to do this. They like Wichita State too. So I honestly, if you want to argue, and I wrote this in the column, that they're not the best team in the country or even the second best team in the country, like, I'll listen to that. If you want to argue that they're not legit and just as a reasonable guess to win the whole thing as basically anybody else, I just reject that.
One Vegas hotel put out odds today, and they Wichita State was seventh. They were behind Florida, Kansas, Arizona, sixth. Florida, Kansas, Arizona, Duke, Michigan State, Wichita State.
Yeah, that's fine. Like,
I agree. Yeah. I mean, it's like people say that they're, you know, they only got the number one seed because they didn't beat anybody. Like, they're right there in the mix. I mean, they're not going to beat Arizona 10 out of 10 times, but, you know, they can hang with these teams like Duke can hang with these teams.
Norlander, will you please explain, because I imagine there's some people listening right now. We talk about the KenPom numbers all the time, and I don't know that we ever actually explain what they mean. So yesterday, this guy on Twitter, it's just funny. Like, every time you tweet, like, you mention this, every time you tweet Wichita State, like, you're just going to get, oh, that's all I can do right now. I can just tweet Wichita State. You know, and people would be like, they suck, or they're gonna fall apart.
They play JV teams.
Yeah, they play. Oh yeah, I get that all the time. They play. Or how about this one? I got yesterday. Now this 2 week break's really gonna hurt them. And it's like, at what point do you stop? People have been saying since the beginning of the year that something is gonna hurt them. We just changed to something, right? It's gonna be that 2-game road trip, you know, to Indiana State, Northern Iowa, that's going to hurt them. Or when they had to travel because of weather on the day of the Indiana State game, oh, that's going to get them. You know, like, nothing ever gets them. Like,
then they needed to lose a game.
Right. Then they need to lose a game because they're slipping. And then they win every Missouri Valley Conference tournament game by at least 13, 14 points. I mean, they blow out everybody. It's just like, it's crazy to me. People keep, like, saying, well, you, like, I wrote this in the column. People, never mind that Wichita State is probably, you know, statistically the most reliable team in the country in terms that they never lose to bad teams, whereas we watch Duke lose to Wake, and we watch Syracuse lose to Boston College, and we watch, you know, all of these other teams do it. Wisconsin lose to Northwestern. Wichita State never lost, like, they never lost a game to anybody, including all those bad teams. And yet, when the bracket's released, there's going to be somebody out there saying they're going to be the first number one to lose to a 16. They never lose to those types of teams. Other people do. Syracuse loses to bad teams, and Duke loses to bad teams, and Wisconsin loses to bad teams, and Virginia loses to bad teams. But Wichita State never has. I just, this anxiousness to be dismissive of them doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Here's the question I want you to address, Norlander. Explain to people, if you can, why the Missouri Valley Conference's lack of strength has nothing to do with the KenPom numbers that Wichita State has assembled. Because I had a guy yesterday, it was funny, like he wanted to use the numbers in one place, but not in another. He said, oh, congratulations, Wichita State, you beat Indiana State. They would be ninth in the Big 12, according to KenPom. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. You respect the KenPom numbers. That's fine. Well, then do you respect that Wichita State would be one in the Big 12 in KenPom? Because they would. And he said, oh, but that's stupid. Well, why are you accept the number? Why do you accept the data in one place but not in the other? If you want to reject all the data, I'm fine with that, I guess. I mean, if you want to, seems dumb, but you can do it. But to apply it in one place, but then when it says nice things about Wichita State, to just be totally dismissive of it seems ridiculous to me. Can you explain this to people, Norlander?
I guess I don't want to take too deep of a dive here, but. it's actually speaks amazingly of Wichita State. For right now, they're fourth in KenPom, and they're 34-0, and that actually speaks amazingly of how good they are, considering how weak the league is this year, that they're even that high. Because I feel like if they even had one loss in Ken's formula, they would plummet to somewhere between, honestly, 13 and 20. In terms of what they would do in the Big 12 and whatnot, I mean, gosh, that argument is just, like, so played out. I'm so sick of it.
You know what they do in the Big 12? About what Kansas did or Oklahoma did, or K-State did?
Yeah, okay, so they lose some games, but you know what? They'd be at or near the top of the Big 12 this season with what they have. And his formula measures, as we've stated before, you know, efficiency, how they do with and guarding the ball, points per possession, points allowed per possession, among other things. And that kind of stuff is, yes, indicative of the teams that you've played against, but it's also adjusted for opponent. So it's not just exactly the teams you've gone against in raw data, so to speak. He actually has a formula there that factors in, okay, if you kind of put these teams against each other, this is generally how they would stack up. And right now, Wichita State is the fourth best team. You know, a real quick thing, I think the turning point for Pomeroy's system in terms of being nationally acknowledged and accepted, I guess would be the word, was when Duke won it back in 2010. They were number one in Pomeroy for like 2 months leading up to it. A lot of people did not like that Duke team at all. This is the team that barely beat Butler in the title game. And like, I'm talking like early January, Duke was the number one team and people were kind of dismissing. And it's not like because they were number one, he was right all along. It was more, you know, the system told you for a good while that Duke was really the best or among the best teams in college basketball. And when they ended up winning it all, it was mild vindication for Ken's system. But anyway, that's a short way of
yeah,
explaining.
It's just that like, I always get like these, like if I have Arizona ranked three, right? I think that's where I have Arizona. And really, this is before the Oregon game, because since then, the Arizona fans have kind of quieted down. But like leading up to that, it'd be like, go look at the KenPom numbers. Arizona's number one. So they have it right, you have it wrong. Which may be right. I mean, hell, I don't know. I obviously care about different things than Ken's formula cares about. But whatever. Like, if somebody wants to argue Arizona's number one, I'm fine with that. If you want to back it up with the KenPom number, I'm fine with that too. Louisville fans right now, you know, you don't know anything about anything. How could you have Louisville ranked wherever I have Louisville?
Yeah, and they're two, and by the way, they're two in KenPom right now.
Right.
That's,
so here's my point. Yeah. So then Louisville fans are like, because they're second in KenPom, and yet it is these exact same people who will then try to tell you Wichita State's not any good. Like, if you're going to acknowledge that the KenPom numbers mean something because Arizona's number one and Louisville's number two and Florida's number three, then you're done with the idea of trying to be dismissive of Wichita State because they're in the same group. I guess that's my biggest thing. I can't understand how people will use these numbers to validate their power conference school, but then be dismissive of Wichita State really in the same conversation.
I think it's just they probably don't understand.
They're just dumb. That's what we're trying to say, right? There's just a lot of dumb people on Twitter, and I should ignore them. Is that what you're telling me?
Boom.
Yeah, and I mean, let's make a pact to just ignore it. I mean, here's the deal.
It's fun to kind of engage.
Oh, I mean, it's fun to little poke fun at. But I mean, now we get to the tournament part, and whenever they lose, I mean, we'll address it then.
I don't even mind saying this. I don't usually root for teams. I root for stories. Whatever. I want them to do well. I want them to do well in the tournament.
Really? Same here. Like, and here's just to quiet people up.
Just to quiet people up. And I talked to Fred VanVleet about this yesterday, and he was really good, just sort of saying, "Listen, we're ready for this. You know, we know what the stakes are." Like it was interesting hearing it from him because I sort of put it out there for him. I said, "Listen, you guys just did something amazing, 34-0. You're going to be the people who believe in you think this is amazing. The people who don't believe in you, this is what I told Fred, they still don't think you've done anything. There was nothing you could do this week that was going to convince anybody to come to your side of this argument." And he was like, "Oh, I know," and I said, "So that said, how anxious are you guys to get into the tournament and not just beat people, but like play Pat? Like, I imagine they look at the bracket and they don't want their 8 seed or 9 seed to be, you know, from the Atlantic 10 or to be from Conference USA. You know, they want, or the Mountain West. I think they want, Pat, bring on your SEC team. Bring on your Big 12 team. Bring on your ACC team. Like, they want to play those uniforms and show people, we could have been doing this to those guys all year long. Like, I get the sense that that's what they're after, and honestly, that's what I'm after as well. And I want them to do well, because I don't want people to and I don't think it'll be wrong, but it'll be a hard thing to argue. I don't want people to draw grand conclusions after a round of 32 loss that says, see, they were never any good. Regardless of what happens going forward, this team's really good, as all the data suggests. But you guys know as well as I do, if they go out early, it is going to be it's going to be hell.
Yeah, and by the way, I thought the weekend, it will be hell, you know, so to speak, relatively speaking, in the sports realm. I thought, you know, Parrish, you had a great weekend, and it was so fitting that you got to see the two biggest and best stories and best things about college basketball this year. I thought it was fitting that they happened on consecutive days, and in a weird way, we're connected to that Valley, Missouri Valley Conference. Obviously, Creighton's not there anymore, but for McDermott on senior night at home, sellout crowd, biggest crowd, I guess, ever in that building's history. Not only does he, you know, break 3,000, he sets a personal record in scoring 45 points, so a career high. They get the big, easy win. And he passed, you know, he passed Oscar Robertson first, then he got to 3,000, then he passed Hersey Hawkins, then he set the career high. I mean, honestly, like, barring hitting a game winner to send Creighton to the Final Four, I think Doug McDermott just had the best game of his college career on Saturday.
It was perfect. It was awesome to be there. Like, the whole weekend, like, you know, we've talked about this before. When you've done this job, as long as I've done this job, you sort of become numb to it all. Like, you know, people will ask me, so what are you doing this weekend? And I go, I got to fly to Raleigh. And they're like, what for? And I'm like, I got to go to Duke Carolina game. And they're like, oh, my God, that's awesome. You're going to be in Cameron Indoor, whatever. And it's just like, I go, yeah. And you just realize that these things that are on other people's bucket list, you're getting to do, but you do them so it's neat, it's awesome, but you do them so often that they just sort of blend together. And I guess my point is, like, this weekend is one that I could actually appreciate in real time. You know, like, I didn't have to look back on it and sort of like slap myself and go, Jesus, man, be a little more appreciative of what you're being, you know, to do. This is like a childhood dream to go to these places and these events. Like, appreciate it. Stop being an asshole.
You talk to yourself like that?
I'm picturing Parrish, like, walking around.
Yelling at himself in a mirror.
Oh, I really do. I talk to myself like this all the time. I hate myself. I talk to myself like this all the time. I cuss myself out every other day. And so this is one where I didn't have to have that conversation with myself. Like, you just sort of know. Like, man, this is really awesome to be here. And because, you know, I don't want to get too, like, sentimental. But, you know, I've gotten to know Doug over the years. I've gotten to know Greg over the years. And to watch him go from what he was, which was a mid-major recruit, to one of the all-time greats in college basketball. And to be there on that night where it was going to be awesome, period. Like, senior night for Doug McDermott was going to be awesome regardless, right? So I was happy to be there just for that. But then we had all these little bitty moments that were separated by time that gave you another, like, great memory. Like, okay, he passes Oscar. Wow, that's a big moment. Like look around. Take this in. And then he gets the 3,000. It's like, wow, that was another big moment. Let's take this in. Then he goes for the career-high 45. So you had all these different moments. And then to be able to go from there, you know, with a 6 a.m. flight, by the way, don't ever schedule a 6 a.m. flight on the day that we actually lose an hour of sleep because of daylight saving.
Yeah.
You talk about wanting to kill yourself. Like, I almost murdered myself at some point between leaving the arena in Omaha and heading to the airport in Omaha. I almost just did myself. I was just going to be done with it. But then to then watch history again.
Yeah, you didn't want to let Fred VanVleet down.
Because I love Fred VanVleet just as much as I love Doug McDermott. So I really got to witness history, you know, in a span of 20 hours in two different places as it pertains to college basketball. So it was a neat night all the way around. I do want to move on and touch on what I think is the big story at this moment, which is that Joel Embiid the probable, maybe let's just say possible, but at one point seemed probable and likely number one pick in the 2014 NBA draft, assuming that he enters the 2014 NBA draft, is in California as we're talking, meeting with a back specialist. Actually, since we started this call, I just was texting with Bill Self, and he said, like, everything is, you know, this is, they promised the family they would get a second opinion. They're delivering on that promise. He seems to, and again, it's a text message, so I can't really, I don't want to say what he's implying, but he seems to suggest that, hey, look, we were always going to get a second opinion. Like, we, you know, this, we're just trying to play it safe. We still feel like he'll be able to go when the Big 12 tournament starts on Thursday. Whether that's true or not, we'll see. But how significant is this, A, to the NBA draft, B, to the college basketball season, or actually let's flip those, A, to the college basketball season, B, to the NBA draft, that Joel Embiid seems to have back issues that are more significant than we initially realized?
A, I think they can't win a championship if he's injured. I mean, if he's not playing, I don't think they have the interior defense to win a title. We saw them against West Virginia over the weekend without him, and their defense was awful. I know most of it was on the perimeter because West Virginia was hitting shots, but you know, Devin Williams played well down low, and I don't think that would have happened if Embiid was there. To me, he just kind of adds. He's such a game changer at both ends of the floor. You know, he was getting better offensively. He was putting up double doubles with ease, pretty much. And you know, he's a guy that can throw the ball to and get a basket. And then defensively, he's just a rim protector. And then in terms of the NBA, you know, with these issues that keep kind of cropping up over the past few months, you know, if him and Wiggins have similar ceilings, you know, Wiggins is kind of the safer pick. And it sounds kind of crazy to say that Wiggins is a safe pick, but you know, he's got no injury problems. Maybe he's got the, you know, motor problems that some people say he has. But I think Wiggins right now, if you had to stack those two next to each other, you'd have to go Wiggins just because Embiid's got these injury problems. We don't know how long these could linger on for.
Norlander, do you agree? I mean, I think I'm on board with that. I would be hesitant in a draft that is this strong elsewhere. Like, people still debate whether it should be Wiggins, Parker, or Embiid to begin with. Given that you've got other seemingly great options, without knowing the extent of what's going on with his back, I think just blindly, I'd be hesitant to pull the trigger at number one on a 19-year-old with back issues. Would you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I couldn't take Embiid first overall. I actually never would have from the start. I understand people that, you know, he's a tantalizing player. Too many big men throughout history have had too many issues. I mean, Greg Oden, who was freaking dominant his year at Ohio State, he also faced injury problems leading up to his college career and then during that 1 year at Ohio State. Granted, he was still ridiculous, and now we see what his career has become. Obviously, Oden is not Embiid, and Embiid is not Oden, but still, when you've got this kind of situation with a back, and we know that back issues can be, I mean, look at what happened to Mitch McGarry this year. Jared Sullinger was hampered by some of this. Obviously, he's not the same kind of player as Embiid, and McGarry's not the same player, but the point is, big men are a tricky proposition at the number one overall spot when you have injury concerns with Embiid. That's why I couldn't take him. Real quick on the college hoop side of it, this is a huge bummer from the mere standpoint that I love watching Embiid play. I mean, I with him on the floor, Kansas is the most entertaining team in the country to watch, with Creighton a close second, in my opinion. So what this will do, we got to see what the diagnosis is, and we got to see how effective he is if he plays in the Big 12 tournament. Kansas has 8 losses. No team's ever gotten to 1 with 8 losses. I don't think it can. I think it would have to win out with a healthy Embiid and have other things break its way to get that. So we're looking at a situation where if Embiid actually is kind of hindered, like if he doesn't play in the Big 12 tournament, will that affect Kansas's seed? Will the committee say, well, we don't know what to expect from him, we'll put him at a 3 instead of a 2? I don't know. I agree with Borzello. Can't win it all if he's not on the floor with him. I would certainly consider if he's fully healthy. But that is, you know, in terms of a non-on-the-court specific storyline, I think Embiid's back right now over the next few days is the big thing to watch.
Do you think they should rest him during the Big 12 tournament?
Yes, I do.
If he's 50-50, yes. I would rest
him. Yes, yeah. No, absolutely. I would say rest him unless he is doctor's clear and he says he is, you know, 100%. I would rest him. Like, ultimately, if Kansas
doesn't matter,
lose,
yeah.
Like, worst case scenario, okay, if he's healthy and Kansas lost its first Big 12 tournament game, I think there are 3. And I don't know how much it's really going to impact, you know, what they're going to do in the tournament overall. So, yes, I would rest him.
Yeah, I think having 100%, if there is going to be such a thing on the table, Joel Embiid, even if it comes at the expense of taking a drop in seed, is worth whatever drop in seed you would have to take.
Right.
You know, like at the end of the day, you know, Kansas is good enough to do the whole thing if they're at full strength and healthy. And so there's very few people you could put in a region with them that I would pick against them. If you told me in advance Joel Embiid is 100%. So like if that's a 2 seed or a 3 seed, like what does it matter really, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I hate when we get to the tournament and we have a premier team with a star player that gets injured that either straight up can't play or, you know, like what happened. We saw
Kendall Marshall.
And Kyrie. I mean, for Duke, a lot of his freshman year. So we've had this a lot over in recent years of premier teams, 1-2s or 3 seeds at worst, that have missed a star player, and it just generally sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I think Carolina with Kendall could have pushed that Kentucky team. You know?
Right. Yeah. Going in before the Marshall thing happened,
they did during the regular season.
Exactly. Remember, leading up to that, it was Kentucky or Carolina. And now, you know, Marshall gets injured. We don't really remember that Carolina team quite as much, but they were right there.
Michigan State is another team that we've been talking about. Are they going to be healthy for the NCAA tournament? They've got all their bodies back now. I don't know that everybody's 100% or even 80%, but everybody's in uniform and on the court. And I thought, like, after their midweek senior night sort of blowout of Iowa, that, okay, here they go. Like, they looked great, particularly in the second half, and then they back it with another loss. No shame in losing in Columbus, really, but I still don't know what to make of this team. When they look good, they look better probably than anybody in the country. But at some point, teams that lose this much just don't go and do what it is we're asking them to do they?
It's still, I mean, to me, it still comes down to Keith Appling. You know, he looked fine during midweek, and then yesterday he looked, you know, back to the kind of hampered by the wrist, you know, he has in the past month, and he had 2 points, 1 for 4. He just wasn't, like, when he's hurt, he's an average point guard, and they need him to be, you know, the All-American caliber point guard he was for the first 3 months of the year. I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know. Michigan State in general, I can still totally see him winning the Big Ten tournament. The Big Ten, by the way, that tournament I think is going to be really interesting because, you know, I maybe we can get to the bubble in a quick sec, but I actually think Minnesota, Nebraska, I actually think they're the first two out right now.
And
you think Nebraska's out right now?
I think they're the first team out. I think Nebraska is just on the cut line. I know.
I went to our
palm reader and started comparing teams, and I would just have them out. I think the Big Ten tournament's actually going to be the most interesting one in terms of seeding because Michigan State really has a wild variance of what they could do. Ohio State, I don't buy in. Like, just a real quick thing to circle back on Michigan State. Like, Harris tweaked his ankle apparently, and obviously he's done that before, so we got to see how healthy he is over the next week or so. I still like Wisconsin a lot, but of course they go and they lose at Nebraska yesterday. Minnesota's playing for its life. I don't really buy into Ohio State that much. Iowa can't defend anyone. Iowa is slipping into the 10 or 11 seed range, so there's a lot of movement, I feel, more than normal for a major conference tournament that's to be had at the Big Ten tournament this week. But so you guys both have Nebraska in, but you would have Minnesota in, but Minnesota out, right?
I have Minnesota out, yeah.
Yeah, Minnesota out, Nebraska in. Now
I think Minnesota needs to win 2 games too, because I think beating Penn State again won't really do much for them.
Good point.
And who does Nebraska open with in the?
They have a bye, don't they?
They have the bye by nature of winning, so we don't know yet.
They're probably going to play Ohio State, right? But Ohio State's fifth, so if Ohio State beats Purdue,
I think it's Purdue, right? So yeah, right. I think. How about this? So if you're Nebraska, I think you're rooting for Ohio State. You don't want to have to play Purdue because you don't want to put yourself at risk of a quote bad loss. I wouldn't. I'd rather play Ohio State, and I think then no matter what happens,
I don't know.
I think they're still in. If you say they're not, Matt Norlander, you can. You're never allowed it in 10 miles so office.
Do you think Pittsburgh's in, Norlander?
Yeah.
Because if you compare Nebraska and Pittsburgh, it's not that close.
Yeah, that's a good.
Bring it up on your palm things.
Yeah, right? Hey, get your palm reader back.
You know
out,
what? That's a great point. I do not like Pittsburgh at all. You know what? I'll even cop to.
Then put Nebraska in the field right now.
You know what?
Put them in the field.
Do it.
Just did.
Okay, fine.
Put it on Rick Bird's whiteboard.
Oh, let's not get into. You know what? Belmont. They're not going back to the tournament. Rick Bird missed it.
Delaware's gonna though.
Delhi tonight. Yes.
Uh-huh. How upset were you when Belmont went down, Norlander?
That's pretty rough. I got to admit, that was pretty. I did not take it all that well. By the way, though, I mean, I was just real quick. Saw Harvard clinch on Friday. Good on them. Three in a row. They're going to probably. Right? Four in a row, but three in a row to make the tournament. Right. They lost that playoff that you were at Borzello a few years back. I think Harvard's a lock to be an 11 seed, personally, and a dangerous one at that. And then we had some good conference title games. I mean, Dunk City won't be back. Mercer played really well, but that was a really entertaining game to watch. So we got five bins in now, and I guess three more to be handed out tonight.
All right. Remember, you're listening to the Ion College Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Squarespace, where you can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. Squarespace is constantly improving its platform with new features, new designs, and an even better support. They have beautiful designs for you to start with and all the style options you need to create a unique website for your business. And they also have amazing support available 24/7. Starts at just $8 a month, and you can start a free trial with no credit card required, which means you can start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, remember this, use the offer code FUN to get 10% off and to show your support for the Eye on College Basketball Podcast. All right, let's finish this up with three things that we're looking forward to this week, brought to you by Squarespace. We are in championship week. What's the biggest thing you're looking forward to? Is it Doug McDermott at the Garden? I think that's probably on an individual basis going to be the neatest thing to watch, right?
No, it's Delaware's game tonight.
Delaware's game tonight. Okay. Okay. How about this? Since we got Norlander to put Nebraska in the field, I'll compromise here. Number one thing that we're looking forward to this week, Delaware tonight playing for a bid to the NCAA tournament. That's number one. Number two, can we go Doug McDermott at the Garden?
Yeah, we can do that. I'll let you do that.
Norlander, Borzello, you guys are going to alternate. So
yeah.
Is that the way that's going to go down?
Yeah, we're going to both be A-10 and Big East. Actually, and Borzello, I believe, on Saturday is going to hit up Stony Brook on the island. Stony Brook, that might be Borzello's third thing to look forward to is if they're playing
Stony Brook's game.
I don't know. Well, you're a Delaware grad, so that makes sense. But yeah, no, the A-10, by the way, the A-10, the Big East should be interesting. I mean, you basically have a de facto elimination game that starts with Providence, St. John's. Whoever loses that has no shot at a bid. The winner, I think, still has to win one more game. St. John's might have to actually reach the title game in the Big East to have a say. But the A-10, man, this league, after losing Xavier, Butler, who was only there for a year, and Temple, kind of three big programs, right now, St. Louis is in, VCU is in, George Washington's in. UMass is in, that's four. Dayton is in right now as five. St. Joe's is slipping, but they're in at six. If St. Joe's can get a win this week and Dayton doesn't take on a bad loss, I'm excited to see what that conference tournament plays out as, because six bids is extremely impressive in a year where I think no one expected more than four.
Yeah.
Third thing, okay, let's talk about the final number one seed. I think at this point, Florida's a lock, no matter what. Wichita State's a lock.
Arizona's a lock.
I think Arizona's a lock as well. So we're really playing for that one number one seed. Probably Villanova's to lose, but if they lose,
which is crazy, by the way.
It is crazy, but if they get beat by Creighton for a third straight time, I just think the committee they could have triggered something in somebody's head. Yeah. They're just not going to let them be a one seed if they get worked by Creighton again.
But there was so much top seed kind of carnage over the throughout the week with
Wisconsin, Virginia,
Duke, Syracuse, Kansas. So it kind of fell to Villanova. And, I don't know if they lose, who's going to take them? I mean, would Kansas get it with eight losses?
That it's never been done with eight losses. I think if Kansas, with a healthy Embiid, were to win the Big 12 tournament and Villanova were to lose, I think Kansas can get it.
I think I might be alone here, guys. I think Syracuse, if it wins out and Villanova doesn't, has a still decent shot at getting that final one seed. And you guys, and I think I'm very alone on this. Why can't, if Syracuse doesn't do it, if Kansas loses, if Villanova loses and San Diego State wins out, why can't we give San Diego State that one seed?
It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, it's not going to
happen. Like it's as simple as that. It's just not going to happen. Like that New Mexico team, their resume from last year from the same league was like really, really impressive.
Yeah, they had like 17 top 100 wins last year, or something like that. And they were a three seed.
I know.
They were just never going to get it done. Like I think you could make the argument, if they were to beat New Mexico again, San Diego State, and all this other bad stuff happened around the country. But it's a little bit like arguing about whether Wichita is going to be a one seed or not.
I hear you.
Like they're going to, because they're going to, and San Diego State's not going to, because it's not going to. But I wouldn't, people are killing me, right, to the extent that people are commenting, I don't want to say killing, about me still having Kansas at fifth you know, in the top 25 and one. But, like, if you go look at their resume, that's what it is, I think. I mean, I think they're right there. I know they got a lot of losses, but they've only got one questionable loss, and that's the one at West Virginia over the weekend. They got better wins than anybody in the country. I think if they were to win the Big 12 tournament and beat the right teams on the way, and really because of the depth of the Big 12, even though I think it's going to be hard not to get top 50 wins by winning the Big 12 tournament. I think they could still get there. Maybe.
I think Michigan, if they win the Big Ten tournament, maybe could sneak in depending on what everyone else does, because that would be a Big Ten regular season and tournament championship. They're probably beating two or three more top 50 teams, which would bring them to 10 or 11, top 10 or 11 top 50 wins this year. So I think, you know, depending on what happens, I think they could kind of be a dark horse that moves from, you know, the back end of the two seed line to maybe the fourth number one.
I think a few people might be wondering why we haven't brought up Louisville, but their non-conference isn't good enough by any means.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, Louisville, Cincinnati are both sitting here 26-5. Neither one of them have a loss outside of the top 50. Like, they don't have a bad loss. And, you know, one of them could, I mean, theoretically win this American tournament, which would probably, you know, require them to win at Memphis, over Memphis, which would be a nice win. If one of them were to win the American tournament and this other bad stuff happens, I think you could make a case for them. I don't know that they'd get there, but you could make a reasonable case.
I would make the case for San Diego State over them because it's a tougher non-con. San Diego State has wins against Creighton and Kansas at Kansas and much fewer losses. So you could make the case. I would just put the Aztecs. I would put Kansas ahead. Michigan's a weird one. That, like Villanova, they don't seem like a one, but you know, maybe they are. I'm still, by the way, I'm just still amazed that Villanova has been able to keep on doing this. I mean, the quietest, maybe 28-3 major conference team ever, with those two weird losses to Creighton and lost at Syracuse. So they've got a lot riding on this week, and it should be a good one. I mean, this will be a very interesting championship week in terms of that one seed. I still think there's a little bit of movement around the 4 and 6 lines. Obviously, the bubble talk dominates so much. But we've even got guys like, in my opinion, like, as I was saying with Iowa, teams that are floating around like 9 or 10. Like, what if Kentucky, okay, call it unlikely, but Kentucky has proven that when you think they can't lose again, they will. Like, Kentucky loses once more, they're probably going to be clinging to like an 11 seed at that point. You look at their resume, it's actually not that good. So the Wildcats have a lot to gain. If they can make an SEC final, I think they can secure like a 6 or 7 seed. If they can't do that, then they could honestly, in my opinion, drop as far to an 11.
Before I let you guys go, as we're sitting here talking about Kentucky and the SEC tournament, I'm reminded that, as we were noting earlier, the historically nice things that happened this weekend, Doug going for 3,000, Wichita State going 34-0. We should probably mention that Florida became the first SEC team in history to finish the regular season 18-0 in league play. The idea, like, listen, Billy's won back-to-back national titles with, and that's a great achievement that, you know, is very rare in this sport or any other. What he's done with this team is just as impressive, because I think, you know, you give me Torian Green, Lee Humphrey, Corey Brewer, Joe Noah, Al Horford. Like, we're going to win a lot of games, right? This roster, the idea that he's been able to do this with this roster is like really one of the great coaching achievements of the past few years. They don't have the obvious pros that make me sort of fall in love with a team the way I tend to do. But my God, they just beat the hell out of everybody consistently every time they step on the court. It's really impressive to watch what Billy's been able to do with this particular roster.
Especially with all the kind of issues they had in the first 2 months with injuries and suspensions and Chris Walker. And he kind of, to me, he just kind of made them think that they can win, you know, beat anybody, whether they're full strength or down three people. I mean, the only two losses, you know, they weren't full strength, and it was by one at UConn and by, I think, 4, 5, or 6 at Wisconsin. I mean, you know, at full strength, they could be undefeated.
Ridiculous. Okay, that's my favorite fact about Florida, is that it was a fluke loss at UConn. Okay, Wilbekin wasn't on the floor because he got injured in his ankle in the final 4 minutes. Okay, and he's probably guarding Shabazz, and he doesn't get that shot off. Okay, so they probably win that if he's healthy. And then they weren't full strength at Wisconsin, lose by 6. This team is crazy close to being undefeated. Only fourth team in the past 15 years from a major conference to run the table. We know Kentucky obviously did it in the SEC 2 years ago, but that was only a 16-game slate. I think it's been ridiculous what he's been able to do. And with Donovan, He's extremely respected in within the profession, within coaching circles, considered a top 10 coach. I think general college basketball fans think he's a very good coach, but wouldn't put him on an elite tier yet. I think that's totally wrong.
That's crazy.
I know, but I'm telling you, like, if you started asking people to name what they thought that was the best coach in college basketball and make a list, I think Donovan does not even start getting mentioned until 10, 11, 12, which is ridiculous.
That's stupid.
That's what happens when you've got, you know, Boeheim, Williams, Krzyzewski, Izzo, you go on down the list. I know, I'm just saying. But what my point is this. Three straight Elite Eights, and they haven't been able to break through. They should break through this year. He'll get to a Final Four. And then they're the favorite. This is the favorite to win it all. And if he wins a third national title, he is an all-time great. I mean, the number of guys that have won three is extremely low. I mean, he'll be, the sixth one ever to do it. So he stands kind of on the cusp of something pretty incredible and amazing with a very good team. And I don't think people are really quite realizing just what this team's capable of and what he can really do to enhance his legacy as like an all-time great, which is pretty remarkable.
I think he'll be in the NBA pretty soon too.
I wonder if he wins it and then, you know, you've achieved this much. Exactly. That's kind of the next step of the conversation. Yeah, I agree.
Okay, I've kept you guys long enough. Let's get on with our days and let everybody else get on with their days. Thank you for being here. Thanks to everybody for listening. Remember, you can subscribe to the Eye on College Basketball podcast presented by Squarespace over on iTunes. That's the quickest way to get the newest episode each and every time we record a new episode. So make sure you're doing that. It's free. And either way, I will talk to you again a little later on this week. Take care of yourself.